going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. Been in his zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over. Right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars, infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coom Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woohoo!
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to one of God's great men. He is Ron Coomer, who joins us now in the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo! Your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Ron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mikey. David, how are you boys doing today?
Doing well, Coom.
Well, we're very curious to get your take on whether the new tight end will be the kind of guy that ends up maybe having a jersey that will be worn by many people in Chicago. Will people be rushing to the store for the Loveland jersey?
It would sure be nice, wouldn't it? give the quarterback an outlet at the tight end spot with Kamada and him, and then yeah. You got some guys that can really run on the outside. It's you know, when our city and their teams play well, our city is just. It's more vibrant. There's like more life in the city, don't you think?
Yes.
So when the Bears are good and you know, let's say the Cubs and Sox are playing in October, the Bears are good, the Hawks and Bulls do. There's just something about our city that's just, you know, it's better than it already is, you know. So I really pull for all our teams to do well. You know, hopefully they get a good draft day today.
Coom, the Cubs are doing well. We'll get to them in a moment. We want your expertise. But certainly this has been a sad week as well. We lost Steve McMichael. Mongo was at Wrigley Field, and I believe you were at the plate when he had his little incident with Angel Hernandez. I know that probably put you in a position to have a relationship with Steve McMichael. What were your thoughts as we lost a legend this week?
Very sad. You know... It's sad in the sense that you lose somebody like Steve. You know, we've all been around Mongo for years, and you know, when him and Danny Hampton walked into a room, it was like an eclipse. You know, they walked in, and it was like the room, you couldn't see the other side of the room. They'd come walking in, and he's like, holy cow, look at them two. You know, and they were like inseparable at times, and, you know, and just great guys. And, you know, Steve was a 10. And him and I was the one that slid into home plate, got called out, spiked my helmet on the plate, bounced up in the air, for some reason, Angel didn't kick me out because he probably knew he blew the call right away. But, you know, then Steve, a couple innings later, does the stretch, and he has a few words for Angel Hernandez, which I just thought was the most – that was just awesome. I laughed so damn hard in the dugout. I was crying. I was like, sweet. And that was just really funny. It was a Steve McMichael moment. And then he blows the kiss at him, and I'm like, you know, even got a little WWF in there with the kiss blowing an Angel. I mean, it was just – it was incredible. And him and I got to be friends through the years. You know, at Mike Ditka's restaurant, I've met him numerous times hanging out and, you know, after all that. And, yeah, sad. He's gone through an unbelievable fight. So, you know, he's back to be a Mongol again now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to tell you, Ron, that's very well said. And that I went back and watched that clip as I was going through so many different things, thinking about losing Steve McMichael. And the look on Angel Hernandez's face is so funny because he's not like – and he threw him out of the game. As yeah. I recall. I mean, what a clown. That was just so ridiculous. But he was so angry. That's one of the all-timers. And you're right. You know, the thing about ALS is the way that it you know, kind of attacks the body, the spirit, the person. And, man, it was so difficult to see a guy who was larger than life, you know, felled by that disease and the way that he battled it and everything that happened. It's been difficult to kind of take it all in. And I think David did a great job yesterday, did a tribute to Mongo. Mm-hmm. And the idea that now he is at rest, now that he is at peace, you know, now that the pain is over, it's just like, you know, it's hard to handle losing people who were an important part of our city, of the landscape of the place. But the idea that someone as powerful and strong as him and the way that he went through that horrible decline from that disease and the idea that he's at rest now is almost – it's almost comforting in a way. And, you know, obviously you pray for his family.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And David, that was wonderful.
Thank you.
It was
tough. A lot of people have had a difficult week.
Yes.
Mourning the loss of Steve McMichael at a time the Bears are drafting, so it's got a lot of mixed emotions. And Coombs, certainly you've been at the ballpark because you're watching a real exciting time in the Cubs season. They've played 26 games. They're 16-10. I don't need to tell you a year ago they were 17-9. In your mind, given what you're seeing and who they're beating, how is this year different from last season? Is it just because they're beating tougher teams, or do you see something more special and sustainable in this Cub team?
Well, first of all, you never know in baseball. You really don't. So saying you have a grasp on it, I would be lying through my teeth. Because if you think you got a grasp on our game, guess what? Wait 2 weeks and see how you feel then. But I really do believe there's some things with the Cubs ball club. We'll just go down the list. The starting pitching has been good. They're doing their job. They're a group that you don't think is going to have big swings in their performance because, you know, they've been there and done that, and they're healthy. So as long as they stay healthy, those guys are going to continue. The Tyone's points, Colin Ray has been a big step up, you know, with Steele going down. He has done his job to keep the team in the game when he is thrown. So that part has been good, and you expect, you know, Imanaga to continue the way he has been. The other thing that I don't think teams expected or were prepared for, and I know the Dodgers won because we saw that in four or five of the games, not the games in Japan, but the games since, is the Cubs' ability to run and their athleticism. It's just infuriating for the other team. If they get guys on base against the Dodgers, they were going to run. And they ran the Dodgers out of a couple games. And you just don't see that a lot nowadays. And that you could just feel it with the Dodgers that they couldn't do anything about it. So that's really good. And this offense, you know, when they put pressure on the opposing team, you know, and they're getting help up and down the lineup, the catching spot, the Cubs are leading in every category, I think, offensively with the catchers. hitting eighth or ninth, you know, Pete Carmstrong's doing his job. Michael Bush has been, you know, do you even consider him like a young player in the league now? I mean, he's doing everything you expect a veteran player to do. And the guy's, you know, a year and a month into Major League Baseball, and he's playing like a veteran player of 10 years. So, you know, and then last but not least, the star players are doing it. And they're did you really think – I didn't get to see Kyle Tucker play as much as you'd like, obviously, before he came here.
Wow.
This guy, he's a player.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
He does it in every aspect of the game is, like, fine-tuned. We're in, the last week of April. He goes and gets balls in the outfield. He can throw. He runs the base as well. And I don't think he swung at a bad pitch away all season yet. He's got an incredible eye, and he's just, you know, the MVP, you know, talk is not unjust for him because he is doing everything you expect the guy to do.
I'm just curious if you have any more information with Seiya Suzuki. Obviously, we saw him scratched with the right wrist soreness after that head first dive, and I know Craig Counsell has kind of joked about the fact that that he will not be sliding head first anymore. And I don't know if that was a joke, to be honest with you. I think it's probably a good idea.
Right.
But is he going to be okay? Will he stay away from an injured list? And then, you know, obviously Ryan Pressly having his knee drained was a shocker. I did not know that was going on. Where's he at? And as long as we're on all the bad news, Javier Assad on his rehab felt something in the side. So just, you know, again, none of this in and of itself is kind of very alarming, but just a lot of little things like that kind of bother you.
Yeah, the Assad thing is a bummer.
Yeah.
Because he is a guy that you don't, you know, we didn't talk about him a lot, but, you know, he was really a solid starter. He really was, and it will be again. But, you know, that was a bummer. He had a setback for sure. The Pressly thing caught everybody by surprise. Nobody knew about it, and he got his knee drained. Somebody who's had 13 knee surgeries while I was playing, you can get your knee drained, get a shot, and a couple days later you can play. So, you know, he's a little bit older, so I'm sure he has gone through some of this issue. You don't just one time all of a sudden get your knee drained. So he has gone through some of this. So that is something, I don't know his issue, but it is something you can play through depending on the injury. I'm no doctor, but I have had my share of time in the training room with the knees. And the same thing with the wrist. The wrist thing for a hitter, we were talking about this yesterday. I was out. The wrist thing for a hitter is a tricky thing. And I know that's why Craig Counsell is being a little probably cautious about this. If you have a sore wrist and you're a hitter, that is one thing that can affect your swing. It can affect, you know, the at-bats day after day. And it can, the worst part of the whole thing can be a real lingering issue, you know, just because we play so much. It just doesn't get time to heal. So that the wrist thing, I would say, after the second time, they're going to now – they're going to be pretty cautious with say his wrist if it's bad, because the last thing you want him to do is be fighting a wrist issue the entire season.
So Ron, when you look at the Cubs third base situation, it's one of those things that we talk about. Well, when the Cubs are good, these are the kind of things that are fun to quibble about because everything else seems to be going very well. Maybe not the bullpen at times, maybe not the starting rotation, but they're winning. But when they have a third base situation, you think they're going to be good this season. You wonder, is this really the best plan moving forward? What do you think about this plan? Because now it seems reduced to Nicky Lopez maybe here to shore up the defense and John Birdie to provide a little speed. But there's no one answer. And when you have three third basemen, do you really have one?
Yeah, you're in a predicament right now where you thought you had, coming out of spring, you thought you might have a solution. You had, you know, Shaw you know, doing, you know, going through spring, and you're hoping that he would catch on at it and work out for Maddie. And, you know, I thought Gage Workman had a great spring, and, you know, he got to the big leagues. And, you know, when you're a young kid and you haven't played out of Double A yet, and then you're expected to be a utility guy where you play maybe once a week at the most, that's a big ask. He didn't play. So, you know, he just wasn't prepared to be that guy. It's an issue for the Cubs right now. There's no doubt. And they're going to, you know, I would guess that in looking at their ball club, that they're looking at solutions right now, whether it be in-house or outside the organization, would be my guess. But it's a situation that doesn't have to be fixed immediately, but boy, you'd sure like to get a handle on that spot. And hopefully one of the guys in-house does well enough where you can start running him out there day after day and, you know, and at least getting something out of that position. But right now it's been somewhat of a struggle. If that struggles for another month, it would not surprise me if the Cubs pull the trigger on a move.
Hmm. Ron Coomer on the Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of Early Pay. More at huntington.com/yourmoney. Ron, we talked about it this morning. The Cubs, I believe, scored 18 runs in two games against the Dodgers. Now they got Philly in for three games. What's your over on your under on runs for this series?
Well, I always get worried when teams score big runs. The Cubs have taken advantage, I'll say this, of the weather conditions. When the conditions have been good to hit, at Wrigley Field, they've taken advantage of that. You know, and sometimes they wait till the eighth inning to take advantage of it, but nevertheless, they've taken advantage of it. So, you know, I mean, we had the wind howling out, and it was a 2-1 game going into the bottom of the seventh, and we've been playing for about an hour and a half only, and I'm thinking, am I missing something here? The wind's blowing out at 30 miles an hour, and the two pitching staffs have dominated. Hold on, by the way. There's going to be 20 more runs scored in this game in the last couple innings. I just like, the hell just happened here? So, you know, the weather, it seems beautiful today. You know, we might get some rain, but it's going to be somewhat warmer. And, you know, I right now, this offense, the way it's going, you know, you expect the star players to hit the top of the lineup to do their job. Beatcore Armstrong's on fire right
Unbelievable.
Now. Unbelievable.
Wow.
He steals it. You can see the confidence just oozing out of him right now. So I would expect the Cubs to score some runs. The Philly starting rotation is good. Bullpen has had its struggles, but the rotation has been pretty good. So it's a to-be-determined, Mike. But when an offense is rolling like this, you know, usually they're going to score some runs.
Since the last time we talked to you, Coom, last Friday morning, you've probably called two of the most remarkable comeback victories that you ever have watched. Do you consider those two of the biggest comebacks you've ever watched? And how do you explain this Cub offense being able to rally and be that resilient?
Well, I just think it goes back to that same thing where they're very confident. You know, it was a cool moment, too. I just felt extremely happy for in that setting. Well, how about Amaya? How about getting the home run with two outs in the ninth to tie the game? This is a guy that got three. He got a weekend off last year in the middle of the season because he was struggling so bad at the plate that they wanted to revamp his approach at the plate and his setup and everything else. And now he is that's a different guy, you know, at the plate right now. And I just felt so happy for him. I was stoked just to see him. He was doing some interviews post-game, and he was on with Bruce right after the game. And I just, you know, you feel great for guys that put in the work, and it pans out for them. That was just a cool moment. Pat and I were like, we sat back after the first comeback game and looked at each other and went, holy cow. Pat goes, I'm exhausted. I go, I agree. I was like, wow, what was that?
Well, you guys were
just great. You know, we just laugh, and, you know, you're loving it. And, you know, and the team's doing good, you know. You try to keep your broadcast the same all the time, but, you know, the human nature side of your boy, when things are going good and, you know, It's not that often when you get Pat Hughes yelling into a microphone. Every now and then I take a peek over there. It's got a chance, and he's just happy. It's just great. You know, it's awesome. So we're having a lot of fun, and I do think we were both at the end of the second game against the Dodgers. It was like, wow, that was something. So, yeah, so it's been really good, David. It's been really good.
Great stuff, Ron. Thank you, buddy. Have a great weekend. Great to catch up with you. Appreciate it.
Have a great weekend, Coom.
Yep, you guys too. Have a great weekend, and good luck to the Bears in day two of the draft. Let's hope they can do some things and get back on track.
Let's go. That sounds good to me. That is Ron Coomer. Always fun to talk to
always
him.
Always plugged into everything going on.
We are going to talk about a certain Michigan tight end with a certain Michigan tight end.
Good plan.
How does that sound? Jake Butt, our guest next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Jake Butt, college football analyst for the Big Ten Network.
Sometimes we're going to talk about X's and O's. A lot of times we're going to talk about themes.
Co-host of the Big College Football Show on Chicago Sports Network.
1,835 days since Ohio State beat Michigan in football. It's been a long time.
You probably can't even count that high. I don't know how you got that number.
Oh, we can at Michigan. I don't know about you guys downtown. Listen, we have no problem. Maybe if you need a calculator.
You can.
Former NFL tight end, Michigan Wolverine great.
Go Blue.
Jake Butt with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to get a chance to talk to a man who is a member of the Brotherhood, the tight end room at Michigan. Jake Butt from the Big Ten Network, CHSN, joins us now, knows a little something about the Colston Loveland selection of the Bears at number 10 in the draft. Jake, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm happy for my guy, Colston Loveland, one of the greats, maybe the great, in my opinion. When I watch the tape, I'd say the greatest Michigan tight end ever. And now coming to Chicago. And hey, congrats to David Haw, too. I don't know what type of black magic you were doing last week, David, but for you to go into the crystal ball and predict this, I saw it all over social media, on radio, on our big college, big pro football show. Congratulations. You called it. You saw it from a mile away.
I'm not sure about that every now and then, Jake. But I think that, you know, you made a really good point in talking about what Colston Loveland has gone through at Michigan and why it is so impressive, or at least one of the reasons. And we were talking with Mully this morning. Jake, he did not have a steady hand at quarterback last year. You can look at J.J. McCarthy the previous season, and that was a national championship caliber team and offense. But what was impressive about was the way that he found ways to get open and to make plays when he didn't have the consistency at quarterback. And that was one of several reasons why I thought, well, you know what, this is a guy that's going to find a way to get open in an NFL offense.
Yeah, and listen, I think you heard Ben Johnson say that Colston Loveland reminds him of Sam Laporta. And what you just described is what I saw as covering Sam Laporta in the Big Ten. I called like three Iowa games in Laporta's final year of college. And what we know about Iowa, this is true every year, is they don't have receivers and they didn't have a quarterback. So what Sam Laporta did at Iowa is he lined up all over the field. He was the solo wide receiver backside. He was the on-ball tight end, off-ball tight end. Occasionally he was fullback. He was the slot wide receiver. So Sam Laporta, and again, that meant defenses were going to put their best cover guy on him and have safety help. So Sam Laporta had to win like a true wide receiver. The Detroit Lions saw that and said, man, I want that's to be part of my offense. And what you saw was Sam Laporta be one of the most impressive tight ends, regardless of the fact that he was a rookie tight end or a young tight end. That's what's happening here in Chicago with Colston Loveland. And that's the big difference between Loveland and Tyler Warren. And, you know, we can get into this. I have some theories of why everyone was so certain that Tyler Warren was the top guy, but Tyler Warren, when you look at his film, all of his routes are flat routes. They're seams, they're crossers, they're straight line routes. Whereas you watch Colston Loveland this past year, they're choice routes, they're option routes, they're double moves. They're beating a guy off the line of scrimmage and then beating a safety at the second level. They're NFL quality routes. Here's how I can sum it up. I think Colston is a better route runner than McMillan, the first receiver taken. Regardless, I think Colston is a better route runner and separator than the first wide receiver taken. So I think the Bears got a weapon even more than just a tight end.
You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score. We're talking to Jake Butt, who joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. That is really interesting to hear, Jake. Certainly, you know, he seems to be such a mismatch against both linebackers and safeties and who covers the tight end, right? And you see him also with, like, some explosion, some sideline routes. I know he caught, like, a 54-yard touchdown pass, 45-yard. He can get down the field more than you usually see from a tight end.
And here's the other thing is, what games did he do that? You know, one of those 50-yard touchdowns was as a freshman in Columbus playing Ohio State in a key moment in the fourth quarter. You know, he made play. Some of those plays came in the biggest moments, in critical moments, in big games. So, and what those routes, I'm kind of playing them back in my head right now. A lot of those, again, were double moves. This wasn't like a Y throwback. Like, sometimes tight ends get a 50-yard touchdown, and it's because they run that little sneak play where they hide behind the line of scrimmage and then run down the sidelines and no one covers them. Like, no, these are 40, 50-yard touchdowns of Colston Loveland routing up defenses that are already aware they have to cover him because he's such a weapon. But he's such a good route runner that he's still able to get open in the critical moments.
He did line up in the slot about 48% of the time last season at Michigan. Certainly he is here to be the weapon you describe. He's also going to have to at some point block. Not that that's going to be his primary function, Jake, but I do wonder, that part of his game, where is he now, and can that be coached at the NFL level?
I'm not understanding – you know, I think a lot of the narrative that formed around the tight end position here, I don't think it was based in a ton of film study, to be honest with you. I don't really understand where Colston Loveland, the narrative that he's a terrible blocker, or an unwilling blocker. His willingness, because he loves the game of football, is high on the scale. He's never going to be a Y tight end that's 275 pounds and can block the best hand in the dirt defensive ends, but he's going to be able to cut guys off on the backside. He's going to be able to climb and take on linebackers, nickels, and safeties, and really that's what Chicago should be using him to do. He's going to lose some blocks. Okay, next season he's going to miss some blocks because it's the NFL. But I'd be shocked if we're saying at this point next season that Loveland is such a bad blocker that it's a problem for anything in the Bears' offense.
You know, it was very funny because they showed him at home with his family. And, you know, there's like two giant elks up on the thing. And they cut to this, and they immediately, whoever's on ABC says, oh, I wonder what these people like to do for a hobby. Like, it was kind of funny, but it was like the guy's at a hunting lodge. It looked so wild, and he's from a different part of the country. What can you tell us about him as a guy? I mean, I saw he just turned 21. That is unbelievable how young he is.
Yeah, he's a bit of a quiet guy. You know, he's really not. You're not going to see him at the bars here in Chicago. You're not going to see him in front of TV. You know, he's not going to be, you know, a media darling where he's constantly, you know, voicing strong opinions. But he loves to work, and he loves the game of football, and I believe he truly wants to be great and be the best version of himself. He's from a small town there in Idaho. Jim Harbaugh told us that I think his hometown is considering having a Colston Loveland Day. He's like the most famous guy to come out of their town ever. So that kind of speaks. He's got those small town values, and I interviewed one of his teammates on Sirius XM radio yesterday, and they just talked about how much they loved him as a teammate, and how everybody shares that same sentiment. So, you know, all those character boxes you like to check, Chicago did their homework and happy to check it.
All right, Jake, looking at the rest of the Big Ten tonight with the second round, the Bears are going to have some choices. I just wonder what you can tell us about Arianti Urseri, who is the left tackle from Minnesota, could be under consideration. Then the tandem of Ohio State running backs, who we know that the Bears get one of those guys, they'll feel pretty good about the position.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how far Will Johnson's going to slide, but yeah. You know, you're looking at a best player available, a guy that really has top 10 player film, and now because of the injuries are real, sure, but now you're saying from a value standpoint, it's worth the risk. You know, you're starting to tip those scales. So Will Johnson's interesting too. You know, I love both backs. Travion Henderson, I think I wouldn't be surprised if we're having conversations as him being the best back in this class. I just think he's that special. He's the best pass protecting back I've ever scouted, you know, I've ever seen on film. And that's so important for, you know, Caleb Williams. Even if it's not a blitzing linebacker, swab the ribs of the defensive end on your way out to your route, you know, help those tackles out. That's such an important piece in the NFL. It never gets discussed. Arianti Urseri, though, very interesting player. I called the Minnesota spring game a few years ago where he was projected to be the starting tackle for the first time, and the coaches started raving about him. They told me the story. They found him from some random camp. He had just started playing football for the first time. I think he was like a junior in high school. So it's not like he has an extensive history of playing football. He's just a freaky athlete, a basketball background. And the sky's really the limit. Great, great athlete that I think had he been playing football longer, maybe had a chance to develop more. He's got first round talent and first round potential. So you're starting to get good value there at that left tackle spot.
I'm curious, you know, you mentioned kind of the difference between Loveland and the kid from Penn State, Warren. And Warren's one of these guys that they used in all sorts of different ways, and he played different positions. I think he was a quarterback when he was in high school or something. But I'm just curious, why do you think, you know, is it purely the route running that you talked about that separates the two of them? Is there, I don't think Warren had a great 40 time or didn't, you know, he would have had like the second slowest if he had timed it or something at the combine. What else stands out to you about those two players, the differences?
So Tyler Warren is better after the catch. If I just take the redeeming quality, I would say Tyler Warren is better after the catch, at least what I saw this year, than Colston Loveland. I would say that the gap there is smaller than the gap of Loveland as a route runner compared to Tyler Warren as a route runner. When Colston runs routes, it's different. He has an ability to be running full speed, stop on a dime, and maintain that same speed going in a different direction. That's really not Tyler Warren. Now, I just think what happens is, we have so much time between the end of the season and pre-draft, it becomes an echo chamber. I'm not about to say this because I think Tyler Warren's a phenomenal tight end. Mm-hmm. I agree with that he could be tight end one, but I believe what happened is Colston Loveland got injured. He missed the Ohio State game. He missed the bowl game. So the conversation in the Michigan offense stunk last year. So there was never any rocket fuel to get the Loveland momentum going. Whereas Tyler Warren, we see him in the playoffs. He wins the Mackey. We're talking about him potentially winning the Heisman. And he's making all these big plays. So the momentum train for Tyler Warren gets ridden all the way up to the draft, where I see a lot of Bears fans saying, man, Tyler Warren's tight end one. Is that because you guys watched every game of Tyler Warren and Colston Loveland? No, like you heard someone say that. There should not have ever been a massive gap or a singular consensus that Tyler Warren was so much better than Colston. I think there's a case. Personally, I think Colston is a better fit for the Bears, and certainly I keep going back to the route running capability and separation capability that clearly the Bears fell in love with.
Great stuff, Jake.
Thanks so much, Jake.
Always a pleasure, guys.
See you later. Yep.
That is Jake Butt. Great stuff. Really interesting. And he
watches these guys.
But he's definitely right about that fact, about that Loveland had the shoulder. And meanwhile, in Michigan, they had the great win over Ohio State, but they had a subpar year. They lost the quarterback.
And Penn State was in the college football playoff. And
Penn State
was... bigger platform.
Yes.
And I think he's exactly right. People latch onto that. Both are excellent players.
Yeah.
Good choices by the respective teams. Bears got themselves a good one, though.
Yeah, it looks that way, and it's pretty exciting. All right, 312-644-6767. I know some people have hung on and want to talk, and we're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to talk about the Bears draft pick and your thoughts on what they need next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Stud. I love his game, just watching him, throughout college. He's that man, and I'm super excited. I mean, the arm talent on him, super smart, does everything the right way, from what I can tell. So I'm super excited. He gave me a call a little bit ago, so we're looking to build that bond and just get with him and help the Bears win.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Colston Loveland. He is the new tight end for the Chicago Bears. That was him talking to the media last night, and he was telling them Caleb Williams stud, but he was saying that he had just gotten a phone call.
That's
from
good.
The
That's
aforementioned
good news.
Caleb Williams.
That's good communication. Nice connection there for the quarterback to make. You want to be on good terms with your new weapon, and you also want to make him feel welcome. So big night for the Bears. Good move by Caleb Williams. Lot of reaction, because not everybody might be as convinced that this is a good move as we are, but that is the beauty of the NFL draft. There were 32 players chosen last night, and a variety of opinions whether they were the right guys.
And let's get some of those opinions right now. Mitchell has waited patiently. He listens on the Odyssey app. Hey, Mitchell.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
I miss my hometown, Chicago.
We're calling you home. Chicago is calling you home. That's an old commercial.
Hey, thank you.
With the coach.
You know, this Bear fans, every time you got the best available player, right? We have to take him. And you're going to take the fourth lineman. I think the biggest need we have right now is a running back that run between the tackles, also a linebacker, and then a lineman. What do you think?
Yeah, that's interesting. A linebacker. There is a couple of linebackers.
Yeah,
I'm just saying there's a couple that are there.
They're there. This is
I would
draft
go
for that.
Later in the draft for that. I think they really need to still work on the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
And I understand the running back. I understand the offense being built around the play action stuff, and I would not argue with the running back. Let's try Tony. He's in Joliet. Hey, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I absolutely love the pick. And I think a lot of people don't really understand how good the guy is. And a little nugget out here for all the fans. There's a guy named Eric Gallo. He's the personnel director for the Shrine Bowl. That's basically the post-offseason game for the best draftable players.
Mm-hmm.
And he had him the number two graded player. Non-quarterback. Number one was Travis Hunter.
Wow.
Number two was Loveland. And he had it graded, and he said, what a great player Chicago's getting, because he also had him graded, and this guy's an expert, as the second greatest he's ever graded a tight end. So I just want to call out Clay Matthews, and thank you for calling out the Bears in that intro, because we're coming, buddy, and tell your little fans they're going to be grabbing Loveland in that end zone, because it's going to be great. Love you guys.
Thanks, Tony.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah.
Dustin queued that one up.
Dustin is still
shade for Clay Matthews. Nonsense. That was uncalled for.
I can't say for certain, but I believe he's shooting dirty looks
I think he might be.
Yeah. He will give him the dirtiest look if he ever runs into him.
Loveland being ranked that high by the Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl organizer or a scout is maybe a tad bit maybe overrated, but I do think that he is somebody that you look at, Mully, And I don't know that he's the second best player in this draft. But I wouldn't surprise me if we talk all the time about blue players, elite players. He could be a guy that in 3 to 5 years fits that category and is one of those difference makers on this Bear offense.
I think it's extraordinary how young the guy is. I mean, he's a very young man. And
2 years younger than Tyler Warren.
Which is crazy.
And also, so you're going to get the best of him. He's still developing his body.
Oh,
he's
going
to be better at understanding NFL defenses. He's already got good escapability.
You'll fill out your frame as you grow. And he's 6'6", whatever he is. Good God.
This is the more you hear, the more you like.
Yeah, I agree with you. Bill is on the shore. Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I love the pick. Looking forward to the second round. You know, I'm a big Big Ten football watcher. Let me ask you guys, when you think of the last time the Bears had a running back with true home run hitting speed, I mean, maybe Forte on the slight bottom of that in his first couple of years. Henderson, man, this kid is so explosive and dangerous. He reminds me of basically a version of Gibbs, who's a little bit bigger. I don't think he's going to be there by the time we have our first second-round pick. What would you think it would take to just move up 3-4 slots in the second round? You think you could do that for a fifth? And do you like the kid? And I would love to see him at Ursary and then, you know, the rest of the picks maybe focus on defense. I think that would be a heck of a beginning to the draft.
Thanks, Bill. Great questions, great topics. We'll address them when we come back. We got to get to a break. 312-644-6767.
Mully and Haw on the score.